I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Who Is Call on the 30th of April, 2012. On the line today, we have Cynthia Sugnanam, Anne Nastiger, Steve Metalis, Wilson Abigaba, Avi Doria, Michael Young, Susan Prosser, and on the Adobe Room, Don Blumenfeld. We have received no apology for today. From staff, we have Wendy Cobb and myself, Michael Peregrine. Don Blumenfeld has just joined the audio bridge. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming to the call. Glad to see the great attendance today. You know, we've made some good progress in the last couple of weeks. So let me just open it up for some quick agenda bashing. If you look at the agenda on Adobe Connect on the right-hand side, this is in the list of things we're going to go through. Does anyone want to add anything to that agenda today? Okay, hearing nothing, we'll jump to it and ask Barry to kindly please go through the action items.
Great. Thank you, Michael. This is Barry. First one is the scheduling of the Who Is Survey Roadshow or webinar, and basically we were going to get with Don to maybe try to finalize what we want to accomplish here, and then we can look at getting it scheduled depending on our when we submit the survey and open up the public comment session and those kinds of things. And if
so,
we want, we can carry this to the end.
Barry, on that action item, Don and I talked today just to clarify what was going into the WebEx based on conversations on the last meeting. So I think we're all aligned now with what the group wanted to do, which was, you know, just reiterate, was to clarify, to give a clear message about what the survey is about, that we're focusing on functional requirements and not policy issues. That's, you know, another conversation. And that we're looking for feedback in the public commentary period to see if we've, you know, missed any obvious questions that people think should be asked, and if any of our questions are not clear to people, and do they have any suggestions on how to improve them?
And do we have a time frame for when we want to conduct these webinars?
Ideally, like you said, I think it should coincide with the public comment period, so we could start the, I think it would be good, personally, and I'd love to hear what everyone else thinks, but I think it would be good to do the first webinar on the day that the documents posted for public comment, so that after the webinar, people can immediately go and start posting comments if they so feel inclined, while it's fresh in their mind. And we were going to do a couple of them at different time frames. So if we do them relatively close together, Barry, then, you know, we get all the webinars done in the first week or so of the public posting. I think that would be effective. What does everyone else think? Avery, I see your hand up. Avery, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I didn't hear you call on me. Sorry. I was probably pressing the mute off at the time. I would actually suggest, I think it's a good idea to have it coordinate with the documents coming out, but I would give those who do like to read things first a chance to have read them. So as opposed to doing it the first day, I might recommend waiting a few days and doing that, because you're right, there are many people who won't read a thing until they've heard about it. But there are some few who will read. And so if you give the 3 days of forcing function to get it read so that you can then ask pertinent questions, I think that might be good. But I think doing it coincident with the release is a good idea. Thanks.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense. So if we, you know, released it and then, you know, maybe 4 or 5 days later did the first webinar and then a few days later did the second one.
And Michael, this is Barry. So looking at our milestone schedule down on the lower right, if, you know, basically the third bullet, we have our webinar scheduled just for May 2012, and we have the submit the draft survey for 14 May. If we think that we can make that schedule, then we could look at the first webinar being roughly like the 17th or 18th of May, and then schedule from there.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I guess the question is, Don, do you think you could be ready for that?
I could be ready. I will be traveling those 2 days, though. I don't know how available I'll be.
I tell you what, I'll send out a doodle just for the few of us that will be doing the webinar, and we'll put together a couple of dates that make the most sense and accommodate, and then we can go from there.
Okay.
And
yeah, Barry, I don't think there's any harm. I mean, if it got posted on the 14th and the first webinar was the 20th or something like that, anyways, I don't think the matter of 2 or 3 days either way is tragic. So if we can, you know, the most important thing is that Don can get and participate in giving the webinar.
Excellent. Well, I'll start getting the paperwork together for the public comment period to get that submitted, and I'll also be doing in parallel getting the webinar thing scheduled. Okay.
Great.
Any more questions about the first action item? Okay, second action item was to complete the draft survey 8.4, which I submitted to Michael, and that's complete. Third action item was to send an email out to the group for volunteers for the test survey, and that's complete. And I've got a list of participants here, which I'll paste into the window. Hopefully that comes out legibly. Oh, it didn't break too well, but we have 9 persons in our test control group. Maybe 8.
I've got a couple more for. Oh, you got McCauley in there. I have to confirm with him on Wednesday morning. I have a call, but I think we'll get Jim Galvin in there as well.
I've got Jim. I'm sorry that list didn't come out very good, but we've got McKaylee, Bob Brashis, Dan Seymour, Don Blumenthal, Jim Galvin, Nicholas Adams, Steve Shang, Francisco Arias, and Dave Piscatello.
This is Steve Metallis. Could I make a comment on this?
You absolutely. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I'm not sure that – I mean, I think it's fine to have ICANN staff – you know, take the survey and get their reactions, but I don't think that will tell us very much. Those 3 people are extremely deeply involved with these issues, and unless we are only expecting people who are that involved with these issues to respond, I'm not sure that's going to tell us too much.
I agree, Steve, but I don't think there's a limit to this list. So if we can... if we can get some more volunteers, if you can reach out and help us get more volunteers, then that would be fantastic.
Okay. I've sent a couple of those names in, but I'll try to see if I can get any more.
And Steve, if it'll make you feel any better, one responded back asking what the WSWG was.
All right.
So, all right. Well, we have a good list started. Definitely, I think it's going to, if I'm understanding correctly, we want our test control group to actually take the survey through the tool. That is correct, or is that a fair statement?
We'd ideally like it to go through the tool, but I guess can you have an action item to follow up with Wilson and see if that's feasible, Barry?
Wilson is on the call, and
I see him now. Okay.
Yeah, and. I don't have it listed as an agenda item, but maybe we can add that under the new business as to talk about getting the survey loaded into the tool and what the requirements and time frame might be for that.
Okay, so let's add that to the agenda and circle back Well, actually, Wilson often can't stay the entire call. Can we just insert that and ask those questions now? I don't want to derail this, but at the same time, I want to be sensitive to. I think it's really late for Wilson, if I remember correctly.
Go for it. Okay. Hey, hello.
Hi, Wilson.
This is Wilson. Hi. I'm on the call, but I'm sorry. I didn't listen to the question you want me to answer right now. Could you please repeat it?
Sure. So, Wilson,
what we need to be.
Yeah. The question is, we're compiling this list you see in the left-hand corner of beta testers or beta survey takers, and
yes.
We'd like them ideally to actually take the survey in the survey tool. Do you think it's feasible to get it loaded up soon?
Yes, that's possible.
Perfect.
That's possible.
Okay, great.
And so, Wilson,
yeah, I can do it. Yeah. I'm sure I can do it within one day after it's given to me.
Okay, great. So basically what I have, this is Barry, what I have listed in our milestone list is that by the 7th of May that we could try to have our survey, draft survey loaded into the tool. So that's approximately 8 days from now. That'll be enough time for you?
Yes, that is enough time for me. If you could provide me the confirmed survey questions maybe in 2 days' time, then I can make it this week.
Excellent.
Okay.
Anne, you have your hand raised?
Yeah, I apologize if I don't recall from the last meeting, but is there some standard language or that you'd like us to be using to go out and solicit folks? I can certainly try to get some people from my INTA subcommittee to participate, but I'm wondering if there's a sort of a party line that you're wanting us to use, or we can just do our own broad brush at what we're looking for.
And it's Michael. I think, you know your audience and the most effective way to communicate with them, because I know that I actually didn't cut and paste my emails to different people because I'm familiar with communicating successfully with them. So if you think that I think you should use your own judgment, really, and try and entice them in the best way you think will work.
Okay, great, thanks.
Okay, this is Barry. I'll continue on with the action items. The fourth one was a call for comments about the R9 inclusion and possible questions. I sent that email out, and we did receive a little feedback, and Michael also added some material into the R9 section of the version 9 of the survey. Action item 5 was to complete version 8.5, and Michael reviewed through the survey, added or highlighted technical terms within the survey that require hover definition. He made changes to R3 and the R8.1. The only question I have, Michael, is you highlighted the terms that need the hover definition, but they don't have the definitions. How do you propose we get those so that Wilson can load those in too?
I will write them in the next couple of days. I just did the highlighting to make sure that everyone agrees I got all the ones that should be defined. And then, it's a matter of a little bit of editing work for me just to write up the definitions for all those.
Great. Thank you.
And I just to be clear to everyone, I did do some wordsmithing or editing, a few grammatical corrections, that sort of stuff as well, through some of the other questions just here and there.
Okay, great. Action item 6 was to Michael and I, and we didn't really get this complete, but with Aubrey being on the call, I think we can accomplish this one. And that's the use of indifferent versus the question is relevant. And why don't we go ahead and discuss this now? I'm going to move down to R6.A. And Avery, I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen or review the transcript from the previous call, but there was concern about the quantity of questions. And while I think most in the working group agree that the question is relevant section that you included in your R6A and R6B, that it was important, but it added to the length of the survey. And so one of the things that the group had come up with is possibly exchanging that with the use of indifferent as an option, especially on the yes-no question format. And so when I was going through to edit version 8.4 and we came to your section, you know, the general gist is that we would try to remove the question as relevant, and then I had the question here, which is per my comment, over to the right. Option 3 through your standard template is don't have an opinion either way. Is that accommodative enough, or does that contain enough meaning that is equivalent to the use of indifferent? And if not, should an option 6 be added here that we use that?
Yeah. Hi.
So, Avery, what do you think?
Yeah. It's totally different. So if you guys want to remove this, go ahead. But to say that you, in other words, it really was going for, and perhaps if it had gone through the whole questionnaire, it might have made more sense as opposed to just having it for this question. But basically, in these kinds of questions, there's really two issues. There's one, do you agree, do you disagree, whatever. And two, does it matter? So there's a lot of things where if somebody says, do you agree that it's better to have tea at 40 degrees than at 30 degrees, I'll have an opinion. Someone will say, and is this issue important? And I'll say, no. And so basically that bivariate nature of a question is, yeah, you said, everybody said they absolutely disagreed with this, but absolutely nobody thought it was important. Was a way of weighting the decision. Now, that's a particular way to do things. So when I first wrote the questions, that's the way I wrote it, because I'm always interested both in the opinion of the fact and the opinion of the relevance or importance. We didn't do that elsewhere. And so perhaps just doing it on one question doesn't make a lot of sense. On the other hand, just doing it on one question becomes experimental to see what kind of answers one gets. I won't act all offended and storm out of the room if you guys say it's too long, we're not doing that elsewhere, take it out, but I do believe it has a reason.
Avery, we all felt it was useful information to have. So we all agreed with you in there. What we were struggling with, and a number of people raised this, and I think it's factually true, was it's too much visual information, and it's too repetitive, and some people may not complete the survey just because of that. If we had if we were talking maybe a 10-question survey, we could probably, the survivability of people finishing the survey, even with that additional questions relevant thing, would probably work okay. But it's too big of a survey for probably people. We want to minimize and keep the momentum going through the questions for them. So our idea was to try and capture a little bit of information anyways, which is why we, in the other questions, added an indifferent element. And I'm wondering if it would capture at least a little bit of information. It wouldn't capture what you're trying to capture here, but maybe a bit of it. Is if we added a number 6 that said this question doesn't matter.
I have absolutely no objection to doing that.
Okay, so there you go, Barry. I guess we'll drop the question as relevant section, add a number 6 that says this question doesn't matter.
All right, great. Understood. Let me take that down.
If that's what you did everywhere else, then be consistent, you know.
Yeah, what we did everywhere else was add a yes, no, indifferent. We're just varying this a bit to make sense with your 1 to 5, right?
Right. I say yes, because I guess I came in when I proposed questions differently than others had. Story of my life.
And so for the text for that question doesn't matter is sufficient?
Sorry, Barry, I don't understand your question.
So to add option 6 here, the text for that option is question doesn't matter?
Yes, that's right. The question doesn't matter. So at least we know if they think that this is an irrelevant or silly question.
All right, great. Okay. Action item 7 was to identify draft survey test takers. We just talked about that and complete. And then lastly, action item 8 was create a first draft communication to the council stating the working group's intention for the independent review. And Michael did send some language for that, and I'll cut and paste that into here. And I believe that the next step is that we'll send this over to Wendy to communicate to the council this message. I'm not sure. What I'll have to check with internally within ICANN is whether an email message to the council will be sufficient, or if it actually is worthy of being in the being an agenda item on the next GNSO council call.
I just want to note that the first sentence without the commas is a run-on sentence. So we need to add our commas back in.
Right, yeah, we'll do. Okay, that takes care of our action items. I think we can move over into the agenda now.
Okay. Barry, I just wanted to ask, is everyone okay with the language there for communicating to the council? Does that capture what we discussed?
It's done. It's fine with me.
Okay. Great. I'm not hearing...
Michael, what are you referring to? Is this just the what Barry's just put in the chat?
Yeah. Yeah, this was the communication basically to council saying, given that we're now publicly posting this and we're doing the webinars and so forth, seeking public comment feedback, that supplants the need for getting our original plan was to get a third-party paid consultant, I think, to review the questions and give us feedback, but now we're going out, we're getting a broader. We've got beta testers, we've got public comment, and we've got a mechanism to encourage people for the public comment.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'm not hearing any other comments, so let's get back to the agenda. So we've gone through the action items. I guess we want to go through the latest draft. Barry, do you want to take us through the targeted changes?
Yes. So first section is the profile question area of the survey. The only thing that was changed through here, and just so that people are aware, anything where there's a yellow highlight is a candidate for a hover box for a definition. But the only change in this area was question number 10, which is how did the participant become aware of the availability of this survey, and that's something that we had talked about on the call 2 weeks ago. Then we'll go ahead and move into the actual survey itself. And by last count, I believe we're at 74 questions now.
This is Steve Metalis. Could I ask a question about that number 10?
Please.
Assuming that we're going to ask the stakeholder groups and constituencies to promote the survey once it's ready to be promoted, we might want to have that as an option too. that they heard about it through their stakeholder group or constituency.
Right. I think that was maybe the intent for the word of mouth of the ICANN community meeting, but I'll make that clear and break it apart between the ICANN meeting or stakeholder group / constituency meetings.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea to do that, Barry, because to Steve's point, it'd be interesting to know how many people find out about things through, their stakeholder meetings and so forth, their stakeholder communications. I mean, despite, the amount of time I've already been around this community, I find that I'm on the RYSG mailing list. I find it very useful just to keep track of things coming out of interest from the council and so forth, rather than going and, checking various websites and being on too many mailing lists. It's just convenient. So it'd be interesting to see if that's becoming the norm.
All right. And take a note of that. Okay, let's move down to R1. And I don't believe that there were any large changes to this one. And I'm having to switch back and forth from my redline version. So there were a few just word edit changes here for this first question. Cintra did bring up a while back that she made the suggestion that this question should be broken up into two questions. I'm not sure if the working group agrees with that or not, so we'll open that up. I would have to agree that these options here are a little confusing, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree that this question could use a bit of a recrafting. I'm happy to take a shot at doing that editing if no one has an objection to me trying to split this up.
This is Steve Metallis. I had one other comment on this aside from that. Which was, where it now says, which will be operated by registrars, registry operators. Are we talking about who is servers that will be operated, or the publicly accessible and machine parsable list that will be operated?
That's part of the awkwardness of the question. I don't think it reads cleanly. So I think what it's trying to say is, should there basically their identity? Number one, the first sentence is identifying, trying to say is there a need for a machine parsable list of domains or IP locations of who is servers, and those who is servers are operated by registrars, registry operators, and IIRs, not that the registrars, registry operators, and IIRs are operating the list. In fact, it's silent on the list who operates the list.
Yeah, that's kind of how I read it, but it could be interpreted either way.
Yeah, I agree. So when I'll rewrite it to try and make that clear, Steve.
Okay, great. And, Michael, I think I'm keeping track of our action items, and we'll kind of follow the same format. I'll have several actions to do to the next version. I'll make those changes and then send it over to you, and then you can bat clean up.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. The R2 section, let's see what changed here. Basically, there were no changes to R2 other than highlights of possible hover definitions. And Centra did have a comment here about whether the survey tool can merge the questions so that they are picked in order of preference. Central, would you care to expand on that a little bit? If you're speaking, you're on mute.
Hi, thanks. I'm off mute now. This is Central. Okay, so question two talks about what areas of benefits does query standardization affect for you, right? Pick one or more. Then question three says select the single most important of the two elements for you. But it says A, B, C, D, and there are actually A, B, C, D, and E in question two, as well as that A, B, C, D, and E are not defined. So I was wondering, actually, if there's any way to kind of merge question three into question two to say, pick one or more in order of preference, perhaps. Does that make sense?
I guess that's it. I think so. I guess the question is, it would be for Wilson. Can we do that? Yeah, I mean, can I choose to select two out of the five and just rank the two of them and ignore the other three? Wilson, or can you comment on that? Barry, is there any way for us to know whether or not Wilson's hearing us?
Let me see. He's still connected. Wilson, are you maybe on mute?
Okay. Why don't we just have that as an action item?
Hello?
Oh, there he is. Okay. Wilson?
Yes?
Did you catch that question?
No, I did not, because I'm in the house and I'm making noise.
Okay. So the question is on in section R2, question 2 and 3, rather than have 3, we were wondering if we can just have question 2 and have people rank question 2, but do they have to rank all of them? What if they just want to say that two of them are interesting to them and rank, two of them, for example, and leave the other three blank? Would that be possible?
Let me look at that question right now. I'm opening my Word document. It's question what?
It's in section R2. It's question 2 and 3. Specifically, question 3 is trying to rank question 2. But we'd like to have just a single question where you can rank question 2. But people answering the question 2 may not even want to select all of those options. They may want to select two or three of the options.
Yeah, I'm seeing it here.
Yeah,
we shall be able to do that. Yeah, please also add it as an action item on my part.
Great, thank you.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
So this is Barry. So if I understand that correctly, that is capable of being done. And so section 3 will, or question 3 will morph into question 2. Michael, are you there?
Okay. I am. Sorry. What did you say, Barry?
So if I understood that correctly, that functionality is there, and so question three will migrate into
disappear.
Question two.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Sorry, I was typing to Avery, I'm not one of those people that can actually type one thing and use my ears at the same time. I don't work that way, I guess. Avery's suggesting that maybe we need to split that question up a little bit more, too, so... And I can see your point. Avery, do you mind taking a shot at carving that one a little bit so we can see what you're thinking?
I can. I guess I just need to understand, this is Avery, what the, in other words, we're asking what areas, now, what benefits do you expect from query standardization? Or we're asking, how does query standardization affect you? And they're similar, though you can have a strong negative effect. Whereas here, but the sentence that says what areas of benefit affect for you is just an awkwardness that I don't quite understand, and I don't know exactly what we're trying to ask. Are we trying to ask, rank it in terms of the most beneficial, or are we trying to rank it in terms of the most affecting? Because bad effect, good effect is can be absolute, you know. The thing that affects something that hurts me.
Yeah. I'm thinking this should say select the following areas of benefit select the following areas of query standardization has benefit in for you, something like that. And then we probably need to, so we're assuming that there's some benefit there, but I think we need to add one more at the bottom that basically is a box that says none of the above, so that they can choose to say negatively, basically claim that they don't have any area of benefit if they really want to. That's the way they feel about it. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, and it goes along with what Cintra said in the list, that the question was meant to be a positive one. So please, you know, rank the since we're doing the ranking, or if we're doing the ranking, please rank the following in order of most to least benefit, or something like that.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
It's just, I always see both positive and negative side of effect.
Hey, Mike, I'll take that one to change that question, and I just captured the statement that you had mentioned, and then we'll add the none of the above option as well.
Okay, and Cintra, to your question in the list here, that should we have a separate question for negatives, I think we kind of revisit this in another question or two, if I remember correctly. I have to go back through. But I think the negative case might be covered elsewhere. Let's take a look through. If I don't see it, I'll look at it again. If we don't have any negative option, we definitely shouldn't include it because people may feel there's no benefit, right? It's a possibility. I personally can't see that, but it's a possibility.
Okay, I think that takes care of R2. We'll move on to R3. And in R3, basically the biggest change in this section was adding the indifferent option to the yes-no questioning format. Michael did split apart question 1 with the question 1.5 that you see right here. Per comments from the last working group session. And then any of the other changes were just minor edits or highlights of the hover possibilities or hover definitions.
This is Steve Metalitz. Could I make a comment on number 2?
Sure, go ahead, Steve.
I think it might be more accurate to say non-English languages or non-Latin scripts?
Okay. There's having worked in IDNs for you know almost 10 years from now, I cringe when I think about getting into the argument over language or script again, but I'm indifferent. How about we do this? How about we do scripts/languages so no one can get offended?
That sounds great. That sounds like a good outcome.
So it should read non-English or non-Latin languages/scripts.
Perfect.
Okay. I'll scroll through to the rest of the questions. I think the rest were pretty cut and dry. Okay, I'll move on to R4. And changes in this section. Again, really the only changes were highlights of hover definitions and the inclusion of the indifferent option on our yes-no format.
Now, one question I had on the hover stuff, because I was kind of on the fence on this one. See how at the beginning of R4 I suggested a hover over error conditions, and then error conditions is mentioned in question 3. Should we activate the hover wherever error conditions show up, just in case they don't happen to hover over it when they're reading R4 at the top? And then they hit it down in the question 3, so we should be prepared to hover again. Okay, I see Sintra says yes. Good enough for me. Let's do that to be safe. I'll go through and when I write the definitions, indicate that it should be hovered wherever a term or a word shows up again.
All right, great. All right, any other comments on R4? Moving on to R5.
I see Sintra has a question whether or not we expect someone to do the survey in one sitting. I think we'd like people to do the survey in one sitting, but I think we're going to know more once we have our beta survey takers try it and comment on it.
And this is Barry. Further to that, the survey tool has the option to log out and come back at a later time to complete the survey as well.
This is Steve Metallitz. Can I just make a comment there? You know, ICANN just went through this on this globalization survey, and where they had a lot of people start it, but a lot of, 80% of them weren't finishing it. It was a very long survey. And one thing they did was to make available an attachment containing the survey. So if you wanted to, you could look at it offline and think about how you would answer certain questions, and then when you came to do the survey, you would be prepared and could go through it a lot faster. So it's I think that was a positive for that survey, which was quite long, and since this survey is going to be pretty long, it might be worth considering for this survey as well.
This is Barry. So perhaps on the homepage of the tool, we could have the attachment of the survey questions there for people to download and take offline and then come back?
Yeah, give people that option, and then they could complete the survey faster online.
And Wilson, were you?
I don't see why.
Okay, you can add that an action item on my part, but I can't confirm whether it's possible or whether it's not. I have to look into it and see.
Okay. I mean, we could also just have a downloadable PDF copy of the survey. I assume we're going to start out with a landing page that people can get to, that we can refer to when we're doing the webinars or something. I guess we haven't talked through that, Barry. How are we going to do that? How is ICANN dealing with that sort of thing these days?
But the potential problem I see with the offline survey is that we have to import it back into the online one, and importing it back may prove to be a problem because there are many chances of losing the format while offline.
Let me just clarify, Wilson. I wasn't saying that you could complete it offline and then just upload it. It was just that you could take it offline and read through it and prepare your answers, and then you would still have to go back to the tool, back to the survey, and enter your answers. But this would give you a little bit of a preparation.
Okay, then that's absolutely fine. We can actually have a PDF downloadable. That's fine. We can do that. And we can have a downloadable PDF at the beginning of the survey so that people can, who want to read, who are reading every time, can do that. That's fine. It's possible.
Okay, great.
And to Don's question, this is Barry. Yes, the survey tool does have the ability that I can start the survey, quit and log out, and then log back in at a later point in time to complete the survey.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, great. R5. Let's see what's changed here. This is highlights of the hover definitions, incorporation of the indifferent notion for our yes-no options, and that's about it. No real significant content changes. However, Michael did add the comment, we need this ranking to be enforced so that no one can enter in 2 sixes, for example.
Yeah, it's got to be an absolute ranking order. So, Wilson, does the tool enforce that?
Could you please repeat the question, please?
So, if I have 6 items and ask in a question and ask people to do a ranking, and they start to punch in 1 to 6, and what if they take 2 items and try and punch in, 1 to 4 and then 2 sixes. Will the system stop them from making that mistake?
Yes, actually, for ranking of items, we shall have like a movable bar whereby people just move it, not punching in fingers directly. So we shall have very, very low chances of such mistakes. We don't have manual input for ranking items. To just be moving automatically, like a movable bar, where you move it with a mouse.
Okay, so it's a drag and drop ordering. Okay, got it.
Yeah, sure. Yes, drag and drop. But you can also, then you can add it as an actual item to just be confirmed.
Okay, thanks.
This is Steve.
Okay.
Just 2 comments on this question, 1A. One, this is purely editorial. We should just specify whether when you rank in order of importance, is 1 the most important or is 6 the most important? And secondly, I wonder whether we should also have an other category 7 here, since I don't think we can assume that this necessarily covers all of the data elements that would be.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Steve. We should have an other in there particularly with some of the new use cases with registries, like what if you're a community TLB or something, and there's a community identifier associated?
Right. Good point.
And this is Barry. So if we include the other option, then do we allow freeform text for them to enter in?
I think you'd have to.
Yeah.
Sovereign comment. Jumping in, I agree on the ranking. Whatever we use, one to whatever, we should set the direction the same for all questions. I've noticed that people get confused when you switch from one being most to one being least. So whatever we do for the scale, I think everything has to be in that same direction, even though the numerical range may be different or something. Thanks.
And Michael, I'll take that action to review through and make sure we're consistent in that regard.
Great. Thank you, Barry. I'm just watching the time. We got 35 minutes left, so we should probably try and pick up the pace a little bit if we can.
Okay. Any other questions with regards to R5? Okay, we'll move on to R6A. And I think we're pretty good with this. I think the only changes here, again, which we've already discussed about the question is relevant, and the only other highlights were just the hover definitions.
Hey, Barry, can we jump ahead to R9 really quickly, because Steve's got to go in a couple of minutes, and I just want to cover what we did in R9 while he's on the phone. So, Steve, let me take a second to explain what I did. I took your list of questions and some of the discussions we had about where things are at with Thick Whois in general development around the ICANN community, that it's intrinsically part of the new TLD agreements and expectations, and really has been for some time with the newer TLDs. Also in respect of the fact that even ComNet is up for question, and that there is, I guess, a scheduled PDP to start when things are a little less busy on finalizing, the question of Thick Whois for even ComNet and a conversion of that. So, making some assumption that that's the way the world's going, I created a couple of questions that were more about clarifications of, things that might help dealing with that. So one question I came up with was, should standardized tools for registrars be developed to help them move from a thick to thin registry? And then another kind of informational question, because a lot of different stakeholders might have a different impression of what's involved or how long it should take for them to be able to migrate from thin to thick. So I thought it'd be an interesting question to ask what people think is a reasonable time frame.
Yeah, this is Steve. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. And I really couldn't think of, in terms of migration sort of questions, I really didn't come up with anything else particularly novel. But if anyone else has any ideas, it'd be great to have them at it. Sorry to hijack, Barry. If we're done with this, we can go back to going in order. I just wanted to point that out to Steve.
thank you, and I will have to drop off now. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, so back to R6A. Again, the only changes to this section, which one is will occur, and that's adding the option 6 to replace the question as relevant. So you'll see that in the next version. The only other change was the highlights of the Hubbard definitions. And I think content-wise, everything is intact from the previous version. Nobody has any questions. I'll move on to 6B. And the same is same. No content changes here, just highlights with the Hubbard definitions. There was one comment that I think does need clarification on question number 5. Is it appropriate to include other forms of contact information, such as social media, I think is what that's supposed to say, as one method of WHOIS contact?
Okay. I actually thought that might be going toward, like, social I don't know what I thought it said. I was having a bit of a brain gap. I should have seen that one.
All right. I corrected the typo there.
Yeah. Clearly, I'm not a crossword puzzle kind of guy.
Okay, any other questions on 6B? Okay, let's move on to Requirement 7. And the only changes from the last version for R7 is this was the nexus for the yes, no, and different section. And so the only other changes were just highlights of the Hubbard definitions.
Yeah, this is a relatively technical set of questions, I think.
Okay, move on to R8, 8.1, I should say. And just like the rest, the inclusion of the indifferent option and then highlight of Hubbard text definitions. And there were a few edits just to the language here, but it didn't change the content of the questions.
Yeah, I just did some edits to, in some cases, to make things more clear. I was not trying to change the questions at all.
And I actually had the comment that over here to the right, that does it make sense to include the indifferent option for these? Because they were a little bit more expanded from just a simple yes, no options that we've had for other questions. I'm inclined to say yes, but I wanted to make sure that the working group agreed.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with having the indifferent in there.
Okay. All right, let's move on to 8.2, I believe. And outside of just the highlights of the Hubbard definitions, a couple of small language changes, but no content changes.
Can I not say anything else? Personally.
Okay. And we just... Oh, there's an 8.3. Is a couple of language text changes for better reading, and then just highlights of the hover definitions.
This is a fairly technical set of questions again, so I think the hover definitions are really vital to this one.
Okay. And we just reviewed through R9. Move on over to R10, which R10 was included in our last version, which was basically kind of a replication of, I believe, R3. But in a who was view versus a who is view. And so the only changes here were just a couple of wordsmiths and a highlight of hover definitions. And I also had changed the description our definition for R10, and I hope that is acceptable by the working group as well. I think that was literally a cut and paste out of the requirements document.
Yeah, it's fine by me. It's easy to read. Does anyone else have, everyone else okay with it?
Okay. There's one other highlight here, which is down on question 6, and there were a couple of dialogue exchanges on the list, and so I just literally cut them and pasted in here for just reference. And I believe it has to do with the time frame for retention changes. And Centra had brought up that, you know, there are different requirements and laws with respect to data retention requirements.
Hey, Centra, what about adding another option to 7A that is an option? You got 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, and you have another option that says varies by jurisdiction.
I don't know. This is Centra. I don't know if varies by jurisdiction would be appropriate, but maybe we could have another option that says varies based on legal requirements or something like that. So,
okay.
So something to that effect. I don't know if we actually wish to speak to the who is the team that actually came up with these requirements to see if they had anything like that in mind in terms of retaining details. Because certainly in Trinidad and Tobago, whenever we are retaining data, it's with that purpose in mind for litigation. So I don't know if maybe we are overthinking this aspect of it or if it's, you know, a valid concern.
Well, I think we're okay. What about in 7A? Let's go up a level, Centra. Let's make another option to say 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. Retention range should be user configurable as another option. And basically what we're saying, because we're worried about functionality here, not policy enforcement, right? So we're just asking the question, should that functionality be variable? So that people can set up their who is, for whatever reasons, maybe that's because of local law, whatever, right? We're not judging why you want to set us up. We're just saying, do you need flexibility?
Okay. I'm the wrong person to ask because I do think, you know, the legal requirement is very important. So I'm guided by the group here.
Personally, I do too. I just think that we have to remember our job is to talk about functionality and ask whether or not people feel strongly about different forms of functionality, not, you know, we're not trying to inform policy decisions or even legal decisions, right? Even though I know some of you happen to be very astute lawyers, so.
Okay, thank you. So I guess you can include that bit, and I'll review it then.
So, Michael, I made two changes here. I put as the fifth option, duration as user configurable.
Yeah,
and
I should say, let's just say duration is configurable because it could be, we don't even want to dictate whether it's end user or server or what have you. It's just the system allows it to be configurable. And we'll leave that as a bit of an open question.
Okay, and I also included indifferent here. Do you think that that's worthy of inclusion?
Yeah, and it's consistent. We
okay.
Put indifferent every place else. We should put it there. I think, you know, it's probably not likely that if they mark 7 indifferent, then you can assume that 7A is indifferent. But, you know, maybe, so they're likely to mark both indifferent in that case. But still, might as well just write the questions consistently.
Right. Okay. All right, moving on to R11. And basically the changes here were with respect to using our standard format of, I changed it from, it was ranked from a 3-2-1 scale to just the general option of very important, somewhat important, not important, and then inclusion of indifferent. And then the original version, which I'll show you here for basically section C, this was originally a table that would be filled out that would have the general use of abuse point of contact over in the left-hand column, and then selecting the 3 or 4 options as columns of that table. I don't think it was different from our other format, so I went ahead and exported it out of the table into this format because I'm not sure that we had the table format option available to us. But none of the content was actually changed here.
The only comment I'd have to say, Barry, is that these should have subpoint identifiers like C1, C2, C3. So that when we're correlating data and responses, we can differentiate them.
All right, very good. Yeah, I'll add those in. I believe that takes us to the end of the survey.
Barry, did you see Centra's comment? I think that to going back to 7A for a second, we could just add another option that says, you know, custom, you know, other, and then give them a text field and allow them or give them a time, if we can force them into entering in like a days or months or something, we'll have to see if Wilson can do that with the tool.
Which one was that again?
That was the one that we were looking at with the time retention, time retention for who was.
Yeah, I just lost network connectivity.
Yeah, I see that.
there and back.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry again. Which question is that? Just so I make sure I capture it.
It was in the who was section.
The who was.
7A in the who was section. I can't remember which R that is.
It's 10.
Right. So 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, other, please specify.
All right, guys.
Hi, this is Cintra. Maybe we could say please specify with reason.
Great, I got that one.
Hey, Cintra, I just want to say that I'm volunteering you to sort through those written answers on that one.
Okay, so we're at the end of this survey. I think that's pretty much it.
Okay, so I guess next steps, Barry, we have an editing review to do. Then do we post, version 10 to the list, see if anyone has any final considerations or comments, give a reasonable period of time of a few days for that, and then I guess we turn it over to Wilson to get it out into the tool. Would that be a plan?
Sounds like it to me. I'll have the changes from my perspective out to you tonight, and then you can take over tomorrow or the next day, and then we can send it out to the list and ship it.
Okay, I should be able to do my changes tomorrow at the latest. I'll get them done Wednesday morning. So, and then we can put it out to the list afterwards. So that's definitely to the list within 2 days. So that's good. Okay. So I think we're done with that. I guess we'll just jump in. I'll ask if there's any new business. Now that we've been through all this work, has it inspired anyone to any new business?
Hi, this is Kasia. Okay. I just want to know, have we set up a meeting for Prague, or do we have any plans for Prague?
That's a good question, Barry. I don't think we have one, right?
At this point in time, no, we haven't set anything up. At best, I had just suspected that we would maybe do updates to any of the councils or the SOs or ACs if that was necessary, because I figured we'd be still in public comment. If the working group does wish to put a session together, I need to know, like, right now.
Well, I think, I'll definitely reserve and make some time to go around and sit in on people's stakeholder groups meetings if they'd like to hear from us directly along to reinforce the webinars that we do, but given that we are in public comment at that time, I don't know that we need also a public meeting. So, Cintra, what do you think?
So, Cintra, I'm guided. I don't necessarily think we need a meeting per se, but I do think we should actually meet with the different constituencies that we do plan on sending this survey to. So I agree with you, Michael.
Okay. Great. So any other new business questions? Barry, can we do a quick review of the assigned items?
Okay. They're all to you and I. The first one is myself. to start getting the paperwork together for the public comment period and to start scheduling the webinars to be hosted approximately at the same time. Then there's a series of edits between myself and you. Michael will provide hover definitions. I will change question 6A, 6B, removing the question. The question is relevant. I think there's one to modify question 10 of the profile. There's just a series of small edits. I don't want to bore everybody with these. So just those two main areas, provide edits, get the next version out to Wilson, and then start scheduling the paperwork for the public comment period and webinar.
Okay, so Barry, you can see me trying to talk and type again at the same time, which is not going to work. But what Cintra was asking, what about the beta testers? And I think that, I guess what was going through my head there, but not specifically announced, which I guess I should share what's going on in my head, is that we should focus on getting the webinar done and the draft up for comment, and thereafter we should focus on scheduling a time to let the beta testers in as soon as, but we want to get it up for public comment and get the webinars going, make sure that we've gotten that nailed down first, and then we can get the beta testers in, because the public comment period is open for quite a how long is it? It's quite a long time, right?
It's 21 days minimum for the comment period, and then 21 days for the reply period. We can have a longer comment period, which I would suggest that we do, given the amount of content that's available for review. So it probably my recommendation would be a 45-day comment period with a 21-day reply period. And then secondary to that, my understanding in terms of the test control group is as soon as we got it, got the survey loaded into the tool, that we would go ahead and email out that control group and have them start taking it before we even started public comment.
Okay, so sure, why not? I mean, there's no reason they all have to go at once either, right? People can trickle in and we can have them do it. Okay.
From a milestone perspective, I was hoping that we could have the survey loaded into the tool by the 7th of May, so the 8th or 9th of May we'll communicate out to our test control group that it's available, that they can start taking it. They can send in feedback as they execute against the survey, and then approximately by mid-May is when we can submit the draft to the council and open up the public comment period.
Okay. So, I'm just looking at the milestones at the bottom right of the screen, and I don't know extending the public when we planned our milestones, we were assuming, I think, the shortest period required in the public comment period was 21 and 21, so 42 days. So we would be resetting our milestones if we did 45 and 21, Barry?
Correct.
So I don't know if we have time to do that. The other thing that goes through my mind is so now that we've gone through these milestones and we'll have the draft going and we'll be waiting for feedback, I think our next meeting in 2 weeks we need to focus the agenda on working through how we're going to process the feedback from the beta testers and then how we plan to process and review public comments information coming back as a group. So we should line that up for our agenda and post that and see if anyone has anything they want to add.
Okay, great.
Regarding the processing of the feedback, this is Wilson. Regarding the processing of the feedback, we shall be able to provide statistics as the respondents fill in the survey. So in that case, if there are any changes to make that we realize that people are making, or if there's anything to do, what from the preliminary feedback shall be able to facilitate and make these changes as well if needed. So in the, I think that's something we should also plan to do, like to review the sample feedback when the survey is taking place and see if there are any changes to do or whether we can leave it like that. But it shall be able to provide the statistics in real time.
Well, sorry, Wilson, I'm not sure I understand. We need to, so the beta tester, the beta takers are going to take the survey, and then we need an out-of-band mechanism for them to communicate back to us what they thought of the survey, right? So I guess we could temporarily add text boxes for that purpose to every one of the questions for just the beta version if you wanted. That would be one way to do it. So they're taking the survey question, and we add them an extra, could we do that for the beta version? Could we add an extra text box in every question that says, with a little note of it saying, you know, notes on questions go here?
Yes, sure. We can do that.
Okay. That allows us to collect the information while they're doing the thing. Susan, you wanted to say something?
So I had a question. I'm going back to the consistency of the format of the survey in general. So
yep.
Some of the questions, especially when they do the but it does the yes, no, and indifferent.
Yes.
There is inconsistency as to whether it's no and then yes and then indifferent and case sensitive, things like that. Is that can be finalized before it goes uploaded into the survey for Wilson, or does Wilson have to fix that all?
That's a good question. I guess Barry and I will clean up as much of that as we see while we're doing our edits, and then we would ask Wilson if we miss something to try and clean that up as well.
Okay.
Okay. So that's how we'll, Wilson, that's great. If you can add that for the beta survey takers, that would get us information back while they're actually looking at the question and capture their first impression. So that'd be the best way. Anyways, let's discuss in detail how we want to review and walk through that information, who's going to look at what, and how we're going to use that information to affect changes on the next call. Because we're running out of time on this one, and I want to be sensitive to people's schedules. Susan looks like she's typing another item. Right. The formatting should be all cleaned up when it goes into the tool. Right now we're working in Word, and it's a little bit all over the place. Okay, Barry, you and I should probably try and do an initial cleanup as we go through.
Yeah, I just added it to my list.
Okay, great. So I think we're at our hour and a half pretty much now, and I'll open it one more time. Any last issues, comments? Intro is typing. Okay. Thanks everyone for the hard work. This was a great call. We got a lot done today. I'm getting excited because we're about to start interacting with the community on the work that we've done, and that's the fun part. So once again, we couldn't do this without your volunteer work and your expertise. Bunch of great resources, and personally, I really enjoy working with all of you. Thank you very much for the call today.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kim.